This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
James Bondi podcast.
Welcome to the podcast discussion about everybody's favorite Indiana Jones movie.
I think it's our favorite.
It's certainly this podcast's patron saint of James Bond movie. I mean, Indiana Jones movies. Where am I?
Okay, that's the last snark you're going to hear about Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, because we're going to take a measured look at this. I don't know if
we're talking 2008's Quantum of Solace. Let's talk about it.
That's right. Hey, how come the writer's strike didn't affect this film? Or did it? Yeah. I'm Matt Gourley.
I'm Matt Myra.
I'm Paul Russ. Guys, we're talking Crystal Skull.
I didn't know that we'd ever get here, honestly.
Really?
You know, when we started with Raiders, I was like, that's so far away, this Crystal Skull business. I haven't seen it since 2008.
Oh, that's
Will
right.
it hold up?
Will it did. Hold
It did not.
Okay.
Now, I'm probably going to be an apologist for this movie, not because I think it's a good movie, but because this is like the James Bond franchise for me, or even Star Wars to a certain extent, where it doesn't matter if it's bad. I'm still getting a fix. I don't know what it is. Like, I love it so much that I don't approach it with critical eyes, even though I see the flaws. And yes, I don't enjoy this one as much as the others, but there's still some things I like in there.
I mean, anytime you just get to see Indiana Jones walk down like a temple hallway holding a lit torch and going through like spider webs and cobwebs and stuff, that's always awesome. Yeah. So more of that. I thought too, similarly, where I was like, oh, so this is out of 4 Indiana Jones movies, this is a lousy one. That's okay.
Yeah.
This is the fourth one.
They make sometimes you make a bunch and some are, you know, and this one's but there's a lot to, I have maybe like 6 or 7 things in mind where I'm like, I really love that.
Yeah.
So I'll try to focus on the love.
Yeah, no, I'm not here to hate on a movie that has gotten enough hate over the years. I'm here to just sort of digest it after a long period of time.
Yes, well you should. You all be true to yourselves. Yeah. I'm just warning you right now that I'm probably going to love Dial of Destiny, even if it's not good.
I'm going to certainly watch it.
when you said I'm going to love Dial of Destiny, it sounded like, oh, I'm going to love Dial so and so.
Yeah, I've got an Indiana Jones 1-900 number that if you guys want to call up, it's sexy as hell.
I would. It's just to report things that belong in museums. Hey, I saw this painting. It belongs in a museum.
Oh.
It's the hot tip line. The Indiana Jones hot tip line.
Matt, what was your, Myra, what was your experience first seeing this? Because you said the last time you watched it was
2008. It was opening night at the Grove. I went with a bunch of folks from the Apple store, you know.
At the Grove.
You were working at the Apple store.
Fun.
Yeah.
And we're like, let's finally do it, everybody. The Genius Bar closed up. All us geniuses went over. We got in line and we you know, it was excitement. There were a couple people wearing the hat in line. I believe it was the Thursday night sort of screening before the, you know, the Friday opening.
Was this the first work hang outside of work with
these
people?
Anything that happens at the Grove, I never considered it outside of work.
Got it.
Yes, I was always we all parked in the same spot. We all clocked in.
I've never worked there, and for some reason, I feel the same.
You know, the Grove is like, I probably go there once every 2 years, and it's fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I worked there for 4 years.
Oh.
And it was a time.
It is kind of, it seems like it'd almost be like Vegas-y, how it has its own sort of enclosed universe, and then you step out of it.
By the way, the music never turns off.
Even at night?
Ooh, creepy.
Even at
like
four, don't people live there?
4 o'clock in the morning.
Or is that just the brand?
No, that's just the Glendale.
Oh.
The brand.
Really?
Yeah, it never turns off. So like, that's when we'd eerie. Be like doing inventory late and like get out at like 3 a.m.
And you're just being serenaded by Michael Bublé?
Bublé, Sinatra.
That seems like where they drop the bomb in Crystal Skull, like the little spooky. Walking through the Grove, I'd imagine I'd have to find a fridge to jump in.
They don't build shopping centers in those little towns they blow up, which is interesting because most things are mixed use now.
That's right.
Yeah.
There should be a little main street, you know, with storefronts.
I want to see how a 2-bedroom for $3,500 would hold up.
But what was the like group response when people were coming out of the theater?
Everyone was confused. Mm. I think the movie isn't helped by the fact that the UFO takes off. Mm. Like,
it's not helped by the fact that it's aliens. You can make an
interdimensional
argument
beings.
For
interdimensional beings.
And I just learned that's Spielberg fought forever and ever. I don't want to do aliens. And Lucas came in and went, all right, we don't have to do aliens. Spielberg's great. I'm in. What are we doing? Interdimensional beings. That was that is out of Spielberg's mouth.
And then put into the mouths of Indiana Jones and Ox, right?
Yeah.
It's hard to write.
Spaces. Ox's first words are interdimensional beings.
Yes.
Well, his first coherent words.
Yes. Jabba-jubi.
It's hard to sort of figure out why, as a society, we've decided that that's a bridge too far for the franchise that has already dealt with
the supernatural.
The supernatural.
I think it's this. Because, yes, adhering to the like B movie, or I mean the serial, Saturday afternoon serials of it, it absolutely makes sense. The timeline has moved on to the 50s. We're doing sci-fi B movies, Red Scare, Alien Invasion. Yeah. But Indy feels like something tied with bringing back the past, not reaching into what is essentially the future, or at least of technology.
Oh, you're confused about how galaxies far, far away work. See, they could be a long time ago. And they have spaceships.
See, I'm fine with that. If he dug up the Millennium Falcon and there are a bunch of Jawas in there, that'd make a lot of sense.
Oh, man, what if it was like just a bunch of sand people instead of those native, possibly Mayans?
I mean, I don't know, what I'd want, because it's like, if they did another religious artifact that had significance for a religion in the world that a lot of like, I would be like, oh, you're going back to the well with diminishing returns. Because how are you going to top that Holy Grail, right?
But like the Crystal Skull, it's a thing. It exists. Yeah. There is a mythology around it.
So I'm kind of like, okay, you can't top religious supernaturalism maybe. So going to, getting out of the religion stuff is good and finding new pockets of supernaturalism, but just doing the alien thing.
If it was Crystal Skulls that were almost like the Ark, so something happens at the end, but it emanates from the skull and it's ethereal. But we don't actually see a CG little alien, like a, you know, Close Encounters
also
alien
like
or something.
It's hard to like. Yeah. Did the alien like begrudgingly blow up her brain? Like, because they animate the alien to like really lean in and open the eyes. And I'm like, now, is the alien saying, oh, I know these Ruskies. They're bad news. I'm going to take care of them for you. Or is it like, here's everything.
Then it's not clear, but is it, she's getting an overload of information and she's seeing too much and that's what kills her.
Maybe it doesn't, maybe she ascends to a new plane of existence. I mean, she does sort of like turn into dust.
But yeah, what is she after is also kind of the, outside of the alien problem, the other, well, that's, I guess, the MacGuffin, but like the baddie of like Russians, guys, it's more complicated than Nazis.
Yeah, it is.
Like, you're this way because of the economic forces you grew up in.
Right.
As opposed to like, your agenda is evil. Yeah. I mean, I know you could make an argument.
Stalin, what was happening? Bad,
of course, of course. Yeah.
The political system of communism is a lot more gray than national socialism of Nazis.
Yeah. So when she's getting like, it's kind of like, tell me everything and stuff. I like, it's hard for me to line that up with like, is that what Soviets?
No.
Is that what deep down they're after? Like with Nazism, like when he's like, give me the power, I'm like, oh, they're in for the ultimate power. That's what they're after. That's why they're trying to open up the
That's why the Ark of the Covenant makes a lot of sense. But then when you look at Denham Elliott in Last Crusade, he's just using the Nazis to get the Grail.
Mm-hmm.
Because he wants it for himself. He wants.
Oh, you mean Walter Donovan.
That's what I meant.
Yeah,
but he wants it for himself.
And even Belloc, isn't a Nazi. He's also using it their purposes. But so it's not even like
thing
like
with
this.
Her. She's like, I just want the super brain powers.
The power is
the ego, and power is
the thing, the through line through all those villains. Paul, what was your first experience seeing this film?
I saw it in Canada. I was in Canada, and there was a movie theater that I knew was going to be the theater that played it. And I went to it on a Saturday afternoon because I think...
Wow, you waited a whole day?
I was working that Friday. I was up in Canada shooting something.
Oh my God.
And it was the talk of the set. Hey, the Indiana Jones movie's out today. Who's going to go see it? And then I ended up going by myself, going to the Indiana Jones movie at the Canadian Theater where they had... KFC and Burger King in the concession area.
That's more American than United States.
Yeah. That was also the theater where...
Can I get poutine?
Yes, of course. Where I saw like Iron Man as well. But I like... It's the theater where I stepped into... It was confusing, so sort of men's room, women's room. Mm. And I accidentally walked into the women's room and I knew how... non-threatening I was that when the two stall doors opened and women stepped out, looked out at Tommy, and they laughed at me like I was a little brother. But I walked in, I was like, why are there no urinals in the men's room? And then two stall doors opened and the moms giggling at me.
Canadian men pee sitting down.
That's right. That's why...
Mayonnaise on french fries and peeing sitting down. That's what they
did. But I haven't told you about I went and saw it. And yeah, I was, I thought it was good, but I definitely, the stuff that jumped out is like my least favorite parts watching it now. I was like, oh yeah, those were my least favorite parts at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I will list right now. No. We'll get to it, guys. We all know what the
best I think, you know, but I will say, I think LaBeouf gets a bad rap.
Yeah.
He rules.
Unnecessarily.
I have to say, I think my esteem for this movie has grown because when I first saw it, having lived through Phantom Menace and trying to tell myself for, I think, even years that movie was good, this one right away, I was like, oof. Mm-hmm. And I was actually, I think the time I liked it least was the first time I saw it. And then as I like hit home video, I started to like it more because I just, the shock of it being kind of bad was over. And so I was just able to... Like there was no pressure. It was really low stakes. And so I think that's part of why I enjoy it. And I do, there's stuff I really enjoy too, but yeah.
Crystal Skull showed you who they were and you believed them.
That's right.
And you said, okay.
The irony.
I'll come back.
Yeah.
Of Dan Aykroyd's cameo not being in this one.
I know, because he's such a crystal skull.
He loves
guy.
The crystal skull.
Yeah.
He makes a vodka called Crystal Skull.
He should have been Mac.
He should have been in this.
Mac is kind of dressed like his character, Dan Aykroyd's character. Totally. And, like the kind
he needed
like,
shorts. He, had, yeah. he just had the neckerchief. Yeah. That's what should have happened.
Well,
oh,
Mac,
he should have been.
Yes.
Absolutely.
This movie, that's my least favorite. My least favorite character in the film is Mac.
Me too. Oof. Me too. And it's not Ray Winstone's fault.
No, not at all.
Crazy.
And it's unnecessary. It's so, a completely unnecessary character.
Even the triple cross is so clumsy that you're not even.
But Harrison Ford does a really land. Good job with that line. Where he like starts to count on his hand.
Oh yeah.
like, he's like, I could use my fingers in some
that's,
way.
That's
I
good.
Think there was a writer's strike issue or just a sort of unpolished script. Cause I'm no genius writer, but every time I watch this, every time they hit a certain line, I go, why isn't that this? Like when he first double crosses Indy and goes, what can I say? I'm a capitalist and they pay. Shouldn't it be, they may be communists, but I'm a capitalist.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And just yeah. more clever things, or there's one that Indy has too, or when he swings and he falls back in the truck and punches those two guys. And
oh,
just,
I thought that was going to go yeah. different.
I thought
way.
That I was closer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just seems like a marker for what they'll then go back and do clever, not clever, but just more character lines that they have in all the other three movies.
Yes.
Know?
I've never watched three and four so close, you know, Last Crusade mm-hmm. and Crystal Skull as we did watching it now. And that might be my biggest complaint about Crystal Skull. I really, you know, we talked last time, Tom Stoppard
yeah.
did a pass.
Yeah.
Whatever the Tom Stoppard yeah. sophisticated wit, which is actually in Raiders and Temple of Doom, yeah. that kind of like
Kasdan.
30s movie speak of yeah. like it's simple words simply said, it's not like overcomplicated yeah. or like the so with this yeah the writing is like so bad like yeah. and like unartful.
And when you hear how many versions of this basic story there were, I watched a YouTube video on all Indiana Jones movies and their scripts and all the fake ones that were put out there by people purporting to have the real script, like Indiana Jones and the Red Scare, Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis and mm-hmm. all this stuff. But this one goes all the way back to 94 or 95. And at times it was called, like Frank Darabont did the original, mm-hmm. like serious version of this called Indiana Jones and the City of Gods, which I think is a much better title. Mm-hmm. I really like Darabont. I can't, mm-hmm. I'm about to read that script. I downloaded it.
Yeah. Well, they say, right. That was, Spielberg loved that script. George yeah. Lucas didn't.
Yeah.
And so they didn't do it.
But that tells you something, right? It's gotta,
yeah. I mean, does it tell you something? It's so interesting the way George Lucas has been portrayed now. I mean, it just, I'm sure, yes, the track record is such.
The evidence
is
sound.
Is there. But like, I mean, I guess it's, I'm just looking at this from a post Star Wars sequel trilogy lens where I think those three movies are worse than the prequel trilogy.
Really? Yeah. I can't go quite that far.
I have
wait,
to.
Wait, those three.
The three prequel films, Phantom uh-huh. Menace through to Revenge of the Sith,
yeah.
I think are worse than, I mean, are better than Force Awakens through Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, okay, right on. I see.
Only because those movies are reacting to each other.
Yeah, it's
in ways that are just so nonsensical.
They're so counterintuitive. Yeah, it's just like this, it's frustrating.
This shouldn't exist like this.
Oh, no, yeah. Say what you will about Lucas's, they are cohesive
yes.
to a fault.
Yeah, of course.
But well, like, I think anybody, if you love movies, the thing you most sign up for or get most excited by is when it's, you can tell it's a vision,
yeah.
a person's vision.
Sure.
Yeah. And so watching those prequels, you can see it is a person's vision and they're executing what they want.
Yeah.
The other sequels that you mentioned are like committee.
Yeah.
So it's
and
different.
Completely
yeah.
incoherent. And I think, I wonder if part of that is, I mean, it's interesting that this movie, Dial of Destiny, is going to come out of the same think tank.
Well, the good thing about that is I feel like James Mangold is enough of a visionary without being an auteur.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he'll have to probably cow to some of that. but it's not like, I don't feel it's a step down so far as just like they gave it to some workman director. I think Mangold is pretty good. I've really liked pretty much everything of his I've seen. But I was watching back this stuff and how Spielberg fought this alien thing. He got Darabont to do the script, was really happy with that, and Lucas didn't like it. And they did it Lucas's way, and look what we got. And then Spielberg backs out of this one. He was going to direct Dial of Destiny and then suddenly doesn't. That's a little worrisome.
And what's George Lucas's involvement in Dial of Destiny?
It's not. It's a Lucasfilm thing. So
let's look at the only person who's been involved with all of these movies besides Harrison Ford. It's Kathleen Kennedy.
Yeah. But I think Harrison Ford had a fair amount of creative input over this. And I was also surprised, you know, he was really reticent to go back to Han Solo, but I saw a super cut of a bunch of interviews where they'd say, would you play Indy again? And he goes like in a New York second.
Queens minute second.
In a New Jersey.
Faster than you can say, land your plane here.
In an Alpha Centauri Centaun.
The thing that actually I discovered I find so off-putting about this film in regards to the classic Indiana Jones-isms that they attempt to do is every previous Indiana Jones film, we get a bunch of booby traps that are mechanical booby traps. Mm-hmm. This one, we get a tilting floor. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
The rest of the booby traps are bored middle-aged men waiting for someone to come.
The guys in the walls. Oh. Or the little...
What is this?
Parkour people in the temple, too.
Oh, yeah. Ernie Reyes Jr.
In the graveyard. Yeah.
Yeah.
That part of it is like so nonsensical to me. Like I buy blow darts in the wall, but they have to be triggered by some sort of ancient mechanism. I don't want to see people like, are they like taking shifts? Is it like I've got Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I'll see you on Thursday.
I bet there was a union thing where it was like, hey, it takes 2 hours to get into the wall and fasten yourself in.
And then like somebody's there plastering the wall over before then. Once you're in, I got to plaster. So
all the skilled technicians and craftsmen that have to make that happen.
I
mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, that moment, I actually love it. When I saw it in the theater, I was like, that's cool. When I see it, it looks like Cats on Broadway.
Oh,
it looks kind of like a little like, and the whispers say.
Every move of theirs looks aided by a trampoline.
Hmm. Yeah.
Just like, because there's so much.
Right.
Yes. Momentum, I guess, upward momentum that couldn't be generated just by a human jumping. So they're like, anyway.
Well, but then it's when you talked about the blow darts too, and Indy kills people, if people like seeing a bloodthirsty Indiana Jones, they're going to be disappointed with this one because he just kills the guy with the blow dart.
Yep.
And accidentally sets a fire of some people
in the tent.
With the chase and stuff. But
He really doesn't.
I mean, he does use a rocket launcher to blow up a truck. There's got to be at least five people in that.
Yeah, that's good. Ooh, good killing.
Part of the problem with this, and actually from what I'm seeing of Dial of Destiny, is it looks like that may be fixed, is Harrison Ford is really wooden in this. There's only a few scenes where he feels like his former self. In this one?
My main complaint, outside of like the crummy like dialogue where it is just like that part with the knife when it fell down. And it went, rip.
Yeah, what is that?
And he's like, oh, shit. And it's like, what is
happening?
There's
no payoff to that. Yeah, that's really a strange moment.
I thought he was like going to be covered in blood or something like that. Like,
he cut his fly. Was it like a comic moment where he cut his trousers in the crotch or something?
When you compare like the scene in the blimp where it's like, I always want a time with you. And what you said was awesome last time where he's like, well, I'm here. You got my attention. That's so much better than the scene when the three of them all get together and it's just like sitcom yelling. Like fucking like, Dan, you said, but you told him to get back.
And
that is all bad. And then the woodenness is.
In fairness, I did laugh really hard when they're in the quicksand that isn't quicksand.
Quicksand is so funny.
I know. What and I was just going to say that. He's so good with the snake.
Immediately says, why didn't you make him finish school?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I and love the quicksand.
Call it a rope. Say it's a rope. But he's old Indiana Jones there. I don't mean old in age, but the older version. Yeah. He's so alive there. Yeah. What is going on?
Yeah.
I think some of it has to do too with he's so gruff and grumbly in this that they had to ADR so much of him that all that beginning scene of the way you're laying into those wobblies, you know, is all ADR'd.
Okay.
It's weird.
I started cooking up a theory because I was trying like, why does this feel so wooden?
Yeah.
It's a hot theory. It needs two mics.
I think that it's, after they shot it, they realized maybe there was some inconsistency from scene to scene. And so they just put down a couple sessions and he just did every line.
Yeah.
ADR. I was trying to look for it where it ever seemed authentic. It seems like all of it is, which means it could just be the result of whatever his voice was for the 2 days he did ADR, whatever mode or his brain,
whatever strain he was,
you know, which is so funny. Yes, it's funny then because of Blade Runner when he did the narration for that. It was like the studio executives thought he was stoned. They like wrote memo notes. They're like, "Is he stoned? Why is he so groggy in these narrations?" But this is more the thing. I'm like, "What was going on?" He just went into ADR, and it's like that fucking part. But it was like, "You're a teacher? Like Shia LaBeouf part is alive?"
And it's
like
part time.
I think he must have been in that because he was also in that phase of not wanting to do publicity. He was notoriously cranky and it was less a bit back then. Mm-hmm. He's alive. I've watched a lot of promo he's done for this new movie and he's happy to be there. He seems like proud and that's why I think we're going to get a much better performance out of him this time.
Maybe stuff needs to be, he can recognize if something's fresh or not because that quicksand scene, that could be like a tired trope. But then like figuring out that it's about a family arguing and you have to lie to your dad that it's actually a rope. Yeah. So he grabs it. That's all
like,
great.
His whole thing of like, well, actually it's not quicksand.
It's really good.
Yeah.
That might be the best scene in the movie.
I know it's strange. And that's also a strange scene because it's one of the most obvious sets in the movie. That's another thing. The cinematography in this film is so overlit. I'm not a huge...
Did you watch the Disney Plus streaming
version? Yes, I did.
Me
it's
too.
Still,
the color was better, but
it's better,
it still
but
looked...
Janusz Kaminski is a genius in his own right for Saving Private Ryan and making things look old and, desaturated.
No. Tom Hanks saved Private Ryan.
That's right. You're right. actually, it's a void collapse. It's not as dangerous as most people think. But in a movie like this, it's just that kind of style. It looks... The backgrounds are just as highly lit as the foregrounds. And think of Raiders and all the shadows that took place in that movie in Temple of Doom. And I think with this, with Crystal Skull, you really miss the shadows and you don't even realize it.
Yeah.
You sort of see it from the open of the movie when it starts on the CG gopher.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh God, what are we doing here? Because it opens, you're like, oh, what's the mountain going to be? It's going to be great. And then it's this, and then the gopher gets up and they love this gopher so much. They do it a bunch of times.
Is that a mountain molehill joke, do you think?
Oh, maybe. Hmm.
Good question.
I mean, those first 10 minutes are like electrifying. And I go, James
Spielberg.
Mangold, James Schmange. There's no way he would ever...
Shoot
the opening scene of these 50s kids and these army guys driving next to you. It's so alive.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to miss Steven Spielberg no matter what in this next Indiana Jones movie because that stuff rules.
But do you think that was in the script originally? Because none of that is plot. That's the only thing that you need is those Russians pulling up to the base. But I guarantee you, Lucas is like, we probably need a 50s fast car in here. And he got Spielberg to do it, which
Steven,
I love it too. I'm glad they did.
Did you ever see American Graffiti?
That's funny. I didn't. Yeah, I hadn't thought about how this opening is like American Graffiti. Harrison Ford is in the trunk there.
Yeah, right.
But he should be wearing a white hat instead of the brown hat.
But like... That was so Spielberg-y, like the way that he shot that car chase race whatever, because there was so much frenetic movement with it and so much tracking with it. And I was like thinking in my head when I was watching that, I was like, oh, give that to another director and they're going to like lock the camera off, maybe pan with the car at some point.
I bet Mangold does take a play from Spielberg there, because these are as big a part of these movies as anything. And I bet he would recognize it's like a director doing a Bond film going, I got to have these certain tropes. It's almost a trope of the movie to have these three beat camera shots where you're near field on something and then you rack focus back and then there's something else to look at. But in this movie, I noticed there's all of these Spielbergian versions of those, but all the actors are a little slower. The camera feels a little slower. So you notice them a little bit more, you know?
Yeah, that like, build up all the way until Indiana Jones's entrance, when he goes, the W's that you're like, that's when like it hits the brakes. And then you're like, whoa. And that's why it does feel like it's partly on Harrison Ford's shoulders. And then it gets even more underlined, I think, when Shia LaBeouf comes in. And you can see he's coming in with the energy of a young man in his 20s who's so stoked to be acting in a major motion picture. But the casting is so bizarre along with that, because Ray Winstone, topsy-turvy guy, Jim Broadbent, and then John Hurt.
Yeah.
That's like three similar types of actors, not from this country actors.
Yeah.
And so they all kind of like feel and look the same. And then, you don't get with Mac, it's like, or we were going to answer this question with Oz, right? Like, is he supposed to be Henry Sr.? Is he supposed to be Ravenwood, Marion's dad?
Yeah.
Because the way Shia LaBeouf reacts to, not that it was like on set, they thought it was, I'm just saying like, they make such a big fucking deal out of Oz. Like when Shia LaBeouf is like, with him again, and his eyes are filling up with tears. It's like, Oz is back. It's like, who the fuck is he raised you?
No, I guess he kind of did. They say that briefly, but I feel like that's Shia LaBeouf going, hey, I got these new acting chops. I'm going to apply them to something that doesn't merit.
I'm with John Hurt.
Yeah.
But and why Oxley's cast John Hurt to not say anything? It is so dumb.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't it feel like... It just feels like they wanted Sean Connery and... what's his face in the movie?
But Marcus Brody.
Yeah,
Marcus.
Yeah,
but
they couldn't have them.
Well, he was dead. Denholm Elliott was dead. But
if Mac had been Marcus, right?
They probably wanted John Rhys-Davies too.
Interesting.
But if Mac,
but I bet he would have done it in a heartbeat.
No, he said no.
Come on,
I swear to God. I swear to God, he said no. They asked him.
Really?
Yes.
If Mac had Marcus Brody, then that would have all been cool that he's like...
I think Brody would be Oxley. He's more the academic and sympathetic to Marion.
Yeah, but it seemed like Oxley was supposed to be like Marion's dad, because that would explain sort of like why Mutt needs to get to him and care so much
about
him.
Why didn't they just make him Ravenwood?
Yeah, it's really weird when you watch it that way. You're just like, this should be Ravenwood.
Didn't they kill him off in Raiders? Like, isn't he like dead in Raiders? Or is it just never brought up?
No, I don't think he's...
Does she say he maybe Raiders so well? And no, I'm thinking of Sean Connery saying, unfortunately, she kept her illness from me.
Yeah, and Raiders, does she say that he's dead? Because it could also be, a little hand waving... Oh, where you go, he disappeared, and then, oh no, he's long lost.
Or do they just feel like they couldn't get an older American actor to have the stature they need against the Harrison Ford?
No way. Who would that be? Who would you cast at that time?
At 2008? That time?
Because that would be an amazing part, because you're like, oh, it's Indiana Jones's father-in-law in this fun family story of... of the mom and the son. Is he alive? And then, yeah, that Marcus, Jim Broadbent is like, well, the Marcus Brody thing too, and the statue, and the he gets hit and the head falls off.
What yeah. I don't know what
is they that
were,
a tribute?
I don't know what they were trying to say. Dead
there. Wait, say that again.
When the statue, when the car runs into yeah. the statue and his head falls off into, the, how is that like?
I don't know.
Paying the man homage.
I'm trying to find out if Abner Ravenwood died.
There should have been a statue of Sean Connery also right there, and their heads fall off and roll together.
Start to kiss.
It's been a tough year.
Trying to
because really, if he's not really if Ravenwood's if, not dead, there's no earthly reason
I know
to not have included that character as Ox.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't even wrap my head around why they wouldn't do
well,
that.
Yeah, well, I can't. It'd make it a lot more sense why Marion is bopping around in those. Oh, hey, let's add another gripe as long as we're doing it.
He is said to be dead when Indiana and the Nazis come to Nepal, where Ravenwoods live, in 1936. The novelization details he died in an avalanche in 1936.
Hey, that can be waved away.
That's avalanche. True.
They never found the body.
It yeah. melted. Here I am.
But yeah, was it said in the movie?
I feel like it was implied.
Huh.
Yeah, that sounds more right than that it just is. Oh, he's alive and bopping around right yeah. now. But I was just when I said one more gripe is just when they get to the jungle and stuff. You really only have like two looks in this movie, right? You like you get the jungle mm-hmm. and then like
the jungle. Opening. Nevada.
Yeah. But it's not as
and
forget about looks. It's more just like
it's globetrotting. Not as globetrotting, yeah.
The other one's kind of zigzag to Nepal, to Morocco, to all yeah. these different countries.
Yeah.
But once they get to Peru, they're kind of they're there.
Temple of Doom's a bit that way where it's mostly India except mm-hmm. for Shanghai. It's got only two places, yes. right? Yeah.
And the Temple of Doom, I thought the skulls kind of had that touch of what the Saqqara stones have of like you get them together, you need to collect them yeah. together to it like so it seemed like they took a little bit of that mixed with watching Crusade next to Crystal Skull also pointed out how much the end of Crystal Skull is like the end of Last Crusade, just not done as well because no Raiders or Temple of Doom ends with that kind of like prolonged hero versus villain at the center thing, right. You know.
Yeah,
and also like, what a bummer of like, you know, we're at Marion and Indy's wedding, and when we cut to the crowd, all we have are John Hurt and Jim Broadbent to yeah. like recognize. Like, you I couldn't know. Even pull a John Rhys Davies like, cameo.
And is it me or is that priest that marries him is real weird? Right,
he's pretty weird.
The yeah. way he kind of. You yeah. may now yeah. kiss the bride yeah. and have you the ring.
He's into kissing.
Yeah,
he's creepy. Yeah, that's like why most reverends get into that line of work.
Yeah.
They love
get to the talk kissing. About kissing.
They love
well, let's talk about the opening scene because this is very divisive. Especially.
I love the chase through the warehouse. That's what you're talking about, right?
I love the whole opening through to the fridge. I have to say, I even
through
like
to the fridge. You don't love the fridge.
No, I like the fridge. I don't have a problem with it. It's yeah, it's crazy.
So much.
It yeah. shouldn't bounce
seriously.
So
that's
much.
Like the problem. It just jumps too many times, yeah. like down the thing. It should just be kind of a thing that launched him, landed,
thuds and skids
yeah.
for a while.
Yeah. yeah, it's just when he steps out of that. I think that's when it goes too far. But yeah. I would find
you expect
it.
Animated birds to be around.
The thing I really do like about it, regardless of the comedy of the fridge, is this opening scene that ends with Indy walking up a hill and actually a really good moment of CG, the billowing cool. mushroom cloud. Mm-hmm. And yeah. it's just telling you Indiana Jones has entered the atomic age
yeah.
and you're in for something different. I thought that was really well done.
Yeah.
I like most of the fight in the warehouse. The Mac stuff really does trip it up.
Yeah, the I like the once he arrives at the bomb. The on the launcher mm-hmm. when he's getting questioned and he's wearing that cool white t-shirt. I love all that. Like that stuff is all cool.
It's funny but how we thought of him so much older and he was only what 65.
Yeah, he was a young. I mean, 60.
We're only saying only because there's a movie now. Coming out in 2 weeks.
But when you watch this movie and everybody, you're all like, "Whoa, okay." And now we look back and it's like he's not. It's almost like he looks more like Last Crusade Indy in this than he does now.
Yeah.
But I was saying all that stuff is good to say that the warehouse chase I really don't like because it suggests what will become a later problem in the jungle chase, which is just like, how long is this fucking warehouse? Like there's just no geography like spelled out. Like
In Temple of Doom, when we see that warehouse.
Oh, and Raiders.
In Raiders, yeah, it's very big.
That's true. That's true. That was when the geography was placed.
They should have had that old guy.
Yeah, it would be like, oh. Yeah.
Like just like a wipe his brow.
Yeah.
And then start
start to put the cabinet back.
What do you think about the Russian heavy, not Cate Blanchett, but the Igor Jajinki actor mm-hmm. who plays, I don't know what the character's name is, but he's like suitably physically the part.
But he kind of talks like this. Yeah. You, this is what does he say? Like this, you've been here years,
something, and it's just there's something he has like strange little beady crossed eyes, and it just
Has he been anything else? Is he a stock?
No,
Russian?
But there's another guy within the Russians that actually survives till the end, and he's in the final scene that you'll see play a Russian a lot. He was on Deadwood. He's in the Miami Vice movie, and.
The thing at the beginning, too, in the warehouse when he gets the gunpowder and it, like, magnetized towards whatever they're looking for, it felt like he had a plan that he didn't have.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And to that, it's the only prologue of these where the thing is the thing for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
You don't get the fun of, like... What you guys love about the Bond movies, an unrelated adventure. The fact that it is the Crystal Skull they're going after and it is the same villains. I mean, I know Belloc shows up, but it's in a different context for a different adventure.
Yeah.
So if it had been somehow...
Does it have to be that, the original Crystal Skull that you put back on that headless body, or could it have been another Crystal Skull from another alien? / interdimensional being.
Sounds like it's good. Or what about just one of Dan Aykroyd's bottles of Crystal Skull Vodka?
You know what happened is they probably combine into one being and a then drunk say alien. That it was delicious. and then leave the planet.
What is the true legend of the Crystal Skull? It's just that
there is
Peru.
And that they do they don't have machine marks or tool marks, so it seems like that no one knows how they could have.
Yeah, there's the famous Mitchell Hedges skull, I think, is the one that was he the guy that discovered. I mean, they've all been debunked, obviously, but
no, that's not true.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't know if you're familiar with Crystal Skull Vodka.
Oh, those
that exist.
Wait, they've been debunked as like they weren't really truly.
They're hoax. They're man-made hoaxes, all of them.
So there's never been found a crystal skull.
That's what you think. They could be alien hands. Oh. You don't know. You don't know if aliens are making.
Man, I never dug in deep enough to know that it's like the equivalent of like a UFO sighting.
Yeah, it is. It's like basically QAnon level thinking of people that there was a real. Bunch of people that are like crystal skulls, whoa, or like, you know, contrails and 9/11 truthers.
I thought it was just
contrails exist. It's just water vapor, but they exist.
Okay, I'll give you that.
That's what I thought.
Crystal skulls exist.
As like a,
that's true too.
Yeah.
How'd they do that? Like, how'd they build the pyramid so great? How did, like, when you find it, that's so, I'm blushing. I feel like a fool. I feel like a Mac.
I think. You are a man. I don't like the Mac character just because there's nothing redeeming about the character.
They also really jump you in like don't worry, you already love this guy.
Right.
Because they have such a history. They've fought together so much. And again, I really like the actor Wei Winston, but he's giving...
I don't even like him enough to go, yeah, I do like this guy.
Yeah. Well, the worst part about him, let's agree, is
it was
when
Robbie Coltrane, I'd be way more in.
Yeah.
He triple crosses Indy at the end. All he cares about is gold and getting what's his. Indy tries to save him, and inexplicably, he just goes, Jonesy, I'll be all right. And then he just lets go.
Don't forget the fact that he winks.
What is he do? Why?
I think he's going to go to the new dimension and become some sort of a god.
You think he thinks that?
I think he thinks that. Oh, I think
why is he trying to get out of there in the first place with a bunch of treasures?
He's got to grab the gold so that when he goes to this new dimension.
Where they don't take gold, they only take crypto.
He can barter.
Crypto skulls. Indiana Jones and the crypto skull.
Oh, boy.
Indiana Jones and the crypto bro.
You regret buying that Rolex now, don't you?
So Mac, right? I guess if he had been, it's a little like what with Cate Blanchett's character. It's like the look and the idea of it is cool, but then there's not enough. And it sucks for you bonding guys. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think if Cate Blanchett had been cast with this, she would have already been a Bond villain in the Sam Mendes, right?
I know.
She is so perfect. She's amazing. An acclaimed
it's not too late.
British actress. Like, it's she's not like
too
the
late.
Best.
It is not too late.
And it's time we have a female villain again. It's been...
When I was watching Tar, I was like, she should be a Bond villain.
I know, me too.
It's so cool.
Me too. And she's good in this. It's just... I do
she's
like
great in
this
Thor
character,
Ragnarok. Like,
you
she's
know.
Great,
yeah. She seems with it. She also was able to squish that very real ant. It was so real. I saw the gunk fall on the lens.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, she's really laying into those wubble-yous. Did you notice?
This? Yeah, but in a way that is like not endearing.
Well, she has this really heavy Russian accent, or excuse me, Ukrainian. And then she just slips right back. I know she's Australian, but she goes into like British, where she'll go, we have been chasing you forever, Dr. Jones. And she uses those collegiate O's that British people use, which I never hear in a Ukrainian accent, but maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe
I don't know.
She's just pronouncing the name the way she's heard it.
Yeah, maybe.
You know?
Growing up,
that's how people have said it, so I'm gonna say it like that. We get all that. Immediately you find out it was Roswell,
right?
It was a recovered body from Roswell, New Mexico. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love Harrison Ford's in that scene too, where he's like, oh, you're talking about that mess you guys had in 47 where no one said anything and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, that's good. But then they have this thing. Neil Flynn comes in as an FBI agent who's like drumming up a Red Scare with Indiana Jones.
I like that
which
stuff.
Is just
I
like
all the Red Scare
this is interesting.
Stuff.
Well, because the next scene is immediately word has gotten back to Princeton.
Marshall College, Matt.
I'm sorry. Fictional Marshall College, where one day he'll be the associate dean with bigger letters.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
they get wind of it. He has to leave his job and
go hang out with who's the guy he's going to go in Germany? Leipzig. Someone's in Leipzig.
Yeah, but when he's getting
it's
on
probably the, a reference to something.
Getting on the train, that's when
the movie kicks into high gear. And we see James Dean.
This was originally Marlon Brando, but this was originally going to be a daughter.
And right, it should have been.
Doctor if it was Mutt.
Doctor.
Nice. I'm pointing it at Paul. You can't see it, but I'm pointing over at Rusty here.
What was the reason they changed it? I forget.
Lost World.
That's right.
He
Spielberg
had just directed The Lost World, and Jeff Goldblum had a daughter.
Oh, and David Kep wrote both of those.
So why would I have a daughter in this next movie? You know that only one character can have a daughter.
You can't do it.
I'm Steven Spielberg. I couldn't make it believable that two characters in different franchises have daughters. Make it a boy.
I love the motorcycle motorcycle chase might be my favorite part of the movie.
It's good.
I agree. And that is now my favorite Wilhelm scream.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That little
because that fits suited. That dude.
Yeah, it really it's all does. Practical too. Yeah. That whole scene.
Yeah, yeah. And it has just like those really fun like near. It's like real life animation, just like seeing somebody's feet like go on the ground and kind of skid along with the motorcycle. Yeah. Like real life stuff like that is so cool. Yeah. It did make me clock though. I was like, oh, there hasn't been usually a half hour into a Indiana Jones movie. There's been like
the lull.
Three rip roaring.
Oh, sorry.
Like the warehouse thing into the,
I'm sorry. It just a nuclear bomb went off in this movie, and you're like, not enough action.
Yeah, I don't know. It just doesn't feel like, I guess it's
here
probably.
Here I am defending Crystal Skull now.
Ah, we did it.
It doesn't feel like maybe an Indiana Jones. Like when the motorcycle thing, I'm like, oh, this feels like Indiana Jones. Maybe because the warehouse, I just don't know how it's turning and. And an Indiana Jones thing works for me most when I'm like seeing the physics play out. You like exactly know how it's all operating.
I think it suffers. The movie suffers from the previous three movies
being good.
Being good and so entrenched in the 30s and 40s.
Yeah. Again, that's
and like that, you're so you feel it. And like you think of Indiana Jones and you think of the 30s and the 40s and you think of the Nazis, you think of World War II, or the lead up to World War II. And then when you go to this one, you jump all of World War II and end up in the 50s. And then they make reference to how cool his adventures must have been during World War II.
That's the worst. That's insult to injury. It's jarring enough to see Indy in the 50s, but then to add aliens in. Let me run a hypothetical. I'm sorry. Let me run a hypothetical by you. It's the same story. Mm-hmm. It's a different cinematographer. It's had two more drafts of a polished script, say, by Tom Stoppard. Your Jez Butterworths, whatever.
Sure.
Okay. You got Harrison Ford, who's really up on his game and he's alive. He's taking a weed break. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He's having some antioxidants.
Or he found a new strain that really makes him alert and ready.
Oxley's Abner Ravenwood, mm-hmm. played by an American. Mac is not
in the movie.
In the movie, truly.
But he does have a companion and it's Sala.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the climax doesn't involve aliens per se, but more of a interdimensional mysticism. Would that be enough to make this
one,
a good movie?
One thing I'd add to that, and it's the thing we haven't brought up, and it should have been the very first thing. Guys, remember when this movie was first announced? There was a lot of promise about practical filmmaking. Yeah,
yes.
That's the biggest thing in this movie.
I'll add something CGI. To that too, because they CGI things that don't need to be CGI. Right. Like that whole obelisk thing looks CGI, but that whole thing is full size or maybe it's a reduced miniature or whatever, but it's practical.
Yeah.
And then they like
it's CG insulting
over
that
it.
They use CGI and aren't breaking their backs to do a cool action sequence.
Yeah.
And then it's more insulting when it's bad CGI.
I will say that
really
the monkey's pompadour was practical.
and the swinging vines is obviously removed. So would you think that then do we have a good movie?
I was on board, and then you said the thing about the vines.
Oh,
would we have a good movie, or is the whole thing kind of flawed from the beginning?
That's a hard question to answer.
I think
you'd have
in
a much
it.
Better movie.
Yeah, and I think that would be maybe enough for me. Those, I mean, that's a lot to ask.
But, yeah,
which is to say they had it in their hands. They could have pulled it off.
Yeah, well, I believe Steven Spielberg is still the man in 2023 right now. He's still making great movies that like are really entertaining.
I wish he'd get Giannis Kaminsky.
So it's like. He's in the zone during Crystal Skull too. So I imagine he's bringing his A game.
Yeah. What else is he making at this time?
I think it is like if the story was more interesting and the, imagine how different it would be if that last chase was just like really filmed in a jungle on like with a army patrol.
And some of it was, that's the crazy thing.
I don't need it on the side of
in Hawaii,
but
they shot that in the jungle in Hawaii. Some
right.
of it. I know, but I'm with you.
But what's cool about like Raiders or something is like, you can tell they might have come up with a stunt because of what the earth was giving them. And they had to like operate around that.
Yeah.
There's just some times like where the car goes up above the people so they can look down. And I'm like, well, that's not really how I can tell you're putting this together. Now that's cheating. And I don't like cheating.
Yeah, I agree.
CG ants are also a bridge too far for me.
Yeah. It's also, it's not just that they're CG, but that they carry people.
Well, ants are very strong. I don't know if you're familiar with the Ant-Man.
I'm familiar with Dave Matthews' Ants Marching. It doesn't say anything about that.
It during that sequence. Yeah. Ding, ding,
ding, ding. Indy wakes up in the morning.
Yeah, can you not just show like the practical ants because... it's sort of like the ADR with Harrison Ford. Once you establish one, how it sounds, it's got to, because like, it'd be cool if you just saw some real,
you know,
fire ants.
But they don't make them
over.
That big.
So,
right? There's no ants that big, are there? No. Maybe.
Maybe there are. I don't know. I just found out the crystal skulls are all fake.
I'm sorry to dash your hopes.
Really?
I know. Dash my hopes.
Upsetting.
And the ants were a holdover from Last Crusade, I believe.
Oh, they had the ants in that film.
Or they were from like the first 94 version or something. Mm-hmm. But they've been sitting around for a while. And I think it's also kind of a nod to the Atomic Age movies of like giant ant, you know, like them,
sure.
The movie Them.
With the idea of, you know, the ideas being held over. And so like Temple of Doom has some sequences and stuff. And ideas being used. When I was up in Canada, I was in I Love You, Beth Cooper, which is directed by Chris Columbus. He wrote the draft for part three.
The much derided
draft. Yeah. And I asked him about it, and he said something that I later saw in an interview, so I don't feel like I'm telling tales out of school or whatever. He said, it was my experience learning you can't try to take everybody's ideas and make them all work together. You got to like cut some stuff and later argue why you had to cut it rather than try to get it all in.
Interesting.
And so it sounds like anything. It was just like, it was somebody who really wanted to do well.
But do you know the elements of his story? They are batshit crazy. There's a monkey king that comes to life, like monkey god. And
yeah, because this would have been written around like 86 or something, around Goonies.
Yeah,
time.
Something
I'm
like
still,
that.
What's the problem?
But the last thing I was going to say was, so the weekend after it came out, on Monday, we were talking about it. And he was like, blow dart thing. He was like, we did that in Young Sherlock Holmes.
Right. I remember that. That's right. Yeah.
And he wrote that. And he was like, I noticed that was used. And he wasn't writing or anything. It was just something he acknowledged.
Interesting.
I invented blowing the blow dart back. Also, when that person screams, have you seen Home Alone? I invented the scream.
I'm Wilhelm.
In the category of stuff that I think is cool and I liked in this.
Okay.
I do like the three waterfalls joke.
Do you?
Oh my God, guys. I'm trying to get this back on a train of positivity.
That's one of my least favorite things.
Agree.
Only because they've already done a big waterfall thing. How many times am I to believe that they can just fall these giant waterfalls and they're all of them fine?
Oz is very strong. Oxley is very strong. Can you not see that?
I buy a nuclear refrigerator
pressure on his flesh.
Well, I mean, the whole like, what did you think of Marion driving because she knew that she saw the tree hanging from the cliff? And
I'm fine with that. I just give her all you can give her because she's not even in this movie enough.
She gets asked to do too much, which is like she has to during an action sequence fall back in love with Indiana Jones, which is like some of the corniest moments.
Well,
she's like,
you're never
you left
out
him,
of
and then he's like, I'm gonna get out, and then he leaves out, and she's like, that bastard.
Yeah,
you really hate that part. That's fascinating.
You think they were kind of trying to echo the Henry Jones rescuing his dad scene where they argue and then he kills the Nazis?
Yeah, I like it in theory. Oh my God, if that scene actually worked on me, I would go bonkers. It just like because I haven't seen enough of Marion to know who she is, that she somehow went from point A to point Z here.
Well, it seems like right. She went from point A to point A. Like, yeah. The point B was just having the son and being off, and then she comes then back, she and back she's around. Immediately
yeah.
back where she was, which I was like, okay.
She's always like, loved him. They've you know, always the loved lie, each other.
When he says, because you never let me win an argument, like that line sort of goes, this is what our relationship is. Like, we're going to be yelling at
wouldn't
each other.
Wouldn't it be, I just, time. This occurred to me though, wouldn't it be, because what we love about Marion is, you know, she kicks ass. So when you see her start falling for Indy, maybe it takes away from her kick-assery.
You're right.
What if Indiana Jones was like, oh, I missed out. What am I doing? Not Marion kicks ass and does the like, hey, so long, buddy.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, I fucked up. She got out.
I forgot about that. You're
she's
right.
She's an adventurer. Was so, she should have been in my life this whole time.
Oh my God.
Time.
She it would have so been so edgy. Much better if she had the rocket launcher.
At the end.
No, in the, when they're in the car chase, Indy was driving and Mutt was next to him, and then she comes out and goes, look out, block your ears, and then fires up.
Yeah.
That would have been better.
She was so cool in that first movie.
Yeah.
She's maybe one of the coolest heroines.
They recreate the little fun when she's gagged. It's just it's so funny to see her talking. So I just feel like she's got to make a big jump. They just need to maybe one more scene.
What do you think they're going to do in this Dial of Destiny film?
About like their marriage.
About their marriage and Mutt.
Is she dead in Dial of Destiny?
Do you want to know?
Ooh, so it is answered.
Whoa. If spoilers.
And you know. Yeah, okay.
I do know.
All right.
I don't know what the context of it is, but I know.
Okay. Well, I don't want to.
I won't say anything, but other than to say exactly every spoiler. No, they are not hiding it. They're not hiding
twice. Wink twice if she's alive.
Do you really want me to?
Yeah. Okay. 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 And now, could you wink twice if Mutt is mentioned?
That I don't know.
Okay.
What about Mutt?
They have to mention something.
I hope he's finishing school.
That would be still because this is how many years later? 15 years later,
his fifth PhD.
So he's probably like got his own motorcycle shop or fencing school.
Maybe he invented a brand new motorcycle engine.
Speaking of Dial of Destiny,
Elon Musk.
Today's the 15th. The LA premiere was last night. And I'm seeing online people that got to go to that and go, we should have really dug in, because I think if we would have contacted them, they would have let us go. And do you know who was there? Harrison Ford.
Yeah. Familiar.
What's Marion's name?
Karen Allen.
Karen Allen. All the actors in the movie, Spielberg, Lucas, and then John Williams came out with an orchestra and played music.
Spielberg and Lucas were there?
Ki Kwan was there.
Man. Like live tracking?
I've never seen that.
Just before the movie, they played.
Oh, wow. That'd be cool.
Where was it? Was it at the Grauman's? TCL?
I'm not sure where it was, but we could.
Was it at the El Cap? It's a Disney film.
It might have been.
Yeah.
We could have got in on that.
All right. Well,
I rarely have FOMO. But I had FOMO.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I know somebody who went to like a, I think I might have referenced this title last one, but it's true. They went to like a Cinerama screening of How the West Was Won. Mm-hmm. And they sat in front of Spielberg, and it was like three guys in their 20s who went to see this movie that's played. And he just thought that was so cool. Mm. He just struck up a conversation with these young movie lovers. I was like, that guy
that's
rules.
Amazing. But this is probably the last time that entire group of people will be together.
Yes. And
possibly. John Williams is what, 90?
I mean, unless at John Williams' funeral, probably they'll get together. Folks, people die.
That's funny. I once got in major trubs with a Twitter once when Vern Troyer.
Mini-me went.
And when the day he died, I tweeted, I was like, oh, now I feel so bad for praying to God last night that Vern Troyer would die. I got it. People are very mad.
Yeah, the Vern the
Troyheads. I thought it was obviously silly.
In your mind, is that something you had always been asking for?
Every single night I do it. I'm like, oh no.
Not long after my daughter was born, I put up this sort of famous picture of like nude, but you can't see anything. Klaus Kinski holding a baby Natasha Kinski, and he's just so scary looking. It's a black and white picture. I put it up as a joke. Here's me and my daughter, and never had heard that he was like a horrible father to her and abused her or anything like that.
Oh, God.
And all my comments just are like, what are you thinking? Who, what? Is this real? Is this a joke? And I was like, I immediately took it down, but I had no idea. Funny. And I had put that up prior, like years ago, because I just thought, he's so creepy looking.
No, you know what? You should reply to them. I'm sorry, but aren't both of them famous? Why wouldn't you want to aspire to be them?
They're better than us.
Yeah. Dad-daughter goals. They're both famous.
Dad, girl, dad. What?
And the Addams Family 2 movie, Wednesday, says
Ken Adam.
No, no, the animated one that came out a couple years ago.
No.
The Addams Family 2, where they go on the road. Wednesday Addams refers Family to the 2? Salem witch trials, the women who died there, as hashtag squad goals. You guys...
Punch up joke if I've ever heard it. Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it.
That's funny.
Was that you? Did you do that one?
I didn't.
Oh, I was like, I was like, did you do punch up on it?
No. Whoever did, I want to shake their hand.
You know, it'd be a fun exercise is to take Crystal Skull and we all
do a pass.
At
least on the, I thought I had more time with that. What was the thing you said?
Yeah. Damn, I thought that was closer. What?
That's so funny that you guys are all annoyed by very different things. Like that, that didn't bother me.
It's just wasted real estate.
I was bothered most by the people in the walls. Yeah.
I love the waterfalls.
You love the waterfalls?
I like the fridge.
I will say the spaceship coming up and the alien stuff, that didn't bother me when I saw it.
The saucer looks good. Good. Like that and the nuke bomb are really good CG.
Yeah, and I also just love the color of the temple, how it's like sunlit and kind of like, Peruvian.
Yeah.
That I think it all looks cool. So
I can't believe that native tribe didn't put up much of a fight with the Russians.
Well, that was another thing that they just kind of gloss over, that the Russians just mow them down and then they give one shot seeing all the dead native.
Yeah.
It's just not like, it feels a little bit like we're coming up on Killers of the Flower Moon here. Maybe the real story here is not about a treasure raider and some communists, but
cut to a couple of native guys that are like, oh, thank God I wasn't working Thursday.
Yeah, I know. Or the guys that are in there now for the next shift, they're like, ooh, better to be in here. Ooh. Cramped. At least I got a transistor radio. It's 57. Guess we should
probably not jump out when they have guns, huh?
What else?
I mean, what else?
The house. The house is done. You know, not far away.
The Indy's house that he pulled up to.
Yeah,
the
brick house.
That's his house, huh?
Yeah,
it's pretty.
I like how in the other ones,
I guess he's
America tenured. Looks like Ilstree Studios and stuff. Like to see it to. What a fucking nitpicky right now I am. The American shots look too American.
I know.
But
well, because it's also supposed to be what, East Coast. We don't know quite what state we're in, right?
It was shot in Connecticut, right?
Jersey. I think it was shot at Princeton, wasn't it?
But it was the first Indiana Jones movie that was shot all in the United States.
Yeah, nothing in the UK.
That's right. And that's they shot some of it in Downey.
Yeah, with that jungle chase is when I feel like, something is really comes out of people had to go and stay at a hotel for 3 weeks and only focus on the digital, not to go back to that, but just like that is where it most feels like, I wish you guys had gotten out of the country and been okay with being away from your families for a few months.
What is it about the Shia LaBeouf sword fight and vine swinging that is so off-putting?
Well, it's really the vine swinging. I could stomach the sword fight.
The sword fight actually is not bad because it is at least
the
set
worst
up.
Part for yeah. me though is the shoe yes. yeah. when he's stretched between the two cars because right. it looks doesn't look natural. It looks like a video game. It
I
looks
do like the thought of Marion being a like stage mom, but for fencing, where she's you know always like running him through. You know, mom, I'm just getting out of the car. Riposte.
You know, Shia, whenever I would see Shia LaBeouf at my gym, he would be working out. I swear to God, in jeans and yeah. work boots.
Yeah. He lives now. He lives in Pasadena, not far from the Indiana Jones.
Oh my God!
Yes, I've seen him walking outside his house.
Have yeah. you seen
walking
him?
Outside the Indiana Jones?
No, he just going by there. I fucking blew it, man.
Well, he did. Mine. Remember, he said himself. He talked some shit in an interview.
Yeah, and Ford and Spielberg both had to speak to him behind the scenes and say like, "Hey, support all the people that worked on this movie." And get in line, buddy.
So I, not because of that reason, but I do love LaBeouf. I think he's a great actor.
I think he's good in this.
And I like him in this. I mean, I think he's probably, yeah, the best character in this.
He's the best thing about those Transformers.
Yeah, he does have they do these clips, collections of him and Transformers going, No. And in Crystal Skull, he has a few of those. He's like, stop. I think it's he does it a lot because really anybody can do that and it sounds natural, right?
That's
yeah.
true.
Like any, yeah.
They also wrote the character to suit him very well because he's in that undeniable phase of young man thing where he's just a ball of testosterone yeah. and like gainsaying and negativity. And so Mutt's a lot like that.
Well, and then the fact that he's, emulating Brando in The Wild One, who's like the first method
has,
actor.
Right, yeah.
It is. He does seem to be kind of bringing a
has
method
anyone
stuff
ever
to-
cut together a supercut of Jeff Goldblum just but like I want it continuous from every movie he's ever played.
And somehow you can stitch them together so it goes up and up.
Jeff Goldblum is Abner Ravenwood.
Who I mean who could it be? Let's like seriously
age-wise it could have been him.
2008.
Yeah, but who has that sense so
you gotta have it.
Oxley is so in all and everywhere miscast because the guy that you would imagine is like this adventurer kind of proto Indiana Jones who's down there is like just an older what Sean Connery would have been, right? Like who's somebody who's like 15 years older, 20 years older than
Harrison
Karen and is burly. Or was a strong man. Charlton Heston?
Did he have to be a strong man?
No, he doesn't have to be a strong man. I'm just like...
To counter that?
In my mind, Oxley wouldn't be this like...
Oh, right. He was a proto-indie, yes.
Yeah, okay, kind of imagining... Garner.
James Garner?
James Garner.
James Garner's good, but Eastwood.
Eastwood would have been rad!
Holy shit.
If you heard Karen Allen's dad is Clint Eastwood.
But now imagine Eastwood playing that role. Ah, oh, Henry Jones Jr.
Yeah, they would have to chase it because I don't get it. But because you would also see how Harrison Ford was intimidated by this guy was Ravenwood was his mentor. That'd be awesome.
That's the way to go, I think.
In retrospect. I can't imagine Clint Eastwood stepping onto a stage like with green screen. And,
I know. Burt Reynolds.
Maybe it happens in Dial of Destiny.
Burt Reynolds.
It could still be Clint Eastwood.
Yeah. That's right. As his Gran Turismo character.
Who else? One take, Steven.
Gene Hackman.
Sure. That's Eastwood.
Yeah, I know it's Eastwood, but now you just got my mind reeling.
What if it was
Donald Sutherland?
Dame Edna.
The late great Dame Edna. Yeah, the guy.
I feel bad about wishing Dame Edna died. Donald Sutherland,
Australia's greatest comedic export. Dame
Edna. Donald Sutherland would be good. Kiefer Sutherland would have been good as the Cape Blanchett. I don't know why I said I just would.
Robert Redford.
Talk about a Kiefer Sutherland. Redford would be really good.
Paul Newman, was he still alive? When did he die? Paul,
yes. Yeah. Oh wait, Newman's still alive. Yeah.
I hate Robert Redford. That would have pissed me off.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Why, you hate him?
I hate him.
Why do you hate him?
I like his movies, the movies that he's in, despite him. But he will often ruin a whole movie.
Why? For me. Why so strong about
too
him?
Too self-conscious, handsome guy. I don't like it. Oh. I like a Warren Beatty. He doesn't.
But you like Three Joke Waterfalls?
How can you like Three Joke Waterfalls and I can trust you on anything regardless?
We all saw it coming, Paul. It wasn't funny.
Oh, man. I loved it. I was like, Three Waterfalls. They knew how to beat the waterfall gag. Do three of them.
James Coburn.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm just still going.
No,
you can't beat Eastwood.
I get it. I get it.
I'm willing to admit
Coburn
that.
And Harrison Ford would have like a finger off. Like in terms of acting, James Coburn has like those long crazy fucking sausages.
Well, he had arthritis and they were like, always like,
cranked him up.
Get ready to Twitter to come at you again.
isn't it fun not going on Twitter?
Yeah. Like, I haven't been on in months. Yeah.
I don't know what they're saying about
it. I use it to promote
me and I don't even do that anymore. And
it's
I don't know
cool
what's happening.
Using
in the
it
world.
Just that's as a beauty. Promotional tool.
It's the beauty of social media. It's like, I'm not that social.
Yeah, see ya, media. Yeah.
Don't need
I'm
it.
I'm hanging on by a thread.
Don't need ya, media.
Any final thoughts on Indiana Jones and the Christmas Skull?
Oh, Indiana Jones Christmas movie.
Oh, God. Oh, let's talk briefly
amazing.
About young
Santa
Indiana
was
Jones.
Real in Indiana Jones.
That's what he finds. He finds the North Pole.
That
Indiana Jones in
that
the North Pole.
Rules. Yeah. That also...
Indiana Jones.
Hey, do you guys want to know the biggest like plot hole ever that like was pointed out to me?
Sure.
Just with Santa Claus being pointed out. Maybe we talked about this before about how Elf the at the end how it's like we need Christmas cheer and for people to believe in Santa again to power the sleigh. Now we've seen that Santa has elves that make toys, and we also see Santa delivers the toys. In what universe? Is Santa delivering toys once a year and there is no Christmas spirit and no believing in Santa? Are these parents psychotic?
Wait.
Who rely on Santa to bring their presents, and then when it's time to believe in Santa, they're like, no. No Christmas cheer for Santa's sleigh. Even though I know for a fact each year he brings gifts to my children.
So in the world where Santa is every year, without fail, bringing gifts to your home.
Yeah,
you're refusing to believe.
Why is there a question of his?
You have a good point.
I see your point.
I think they mostly cut to the Jewish families. Didn't really bring anything over.
Well, it's beggar's belief too. How many times are we going to believe Indiana Jones doesn't really believe in this mumbo jumbo?
Well, that's just my heart leapt when I thought of an actual Indiana Jones fight Santa Claus movie. I was like, no, the logic doesn't hold up.
Oh, it sure does.
Everybody would
I would be willing to
they
do
would
it.
Know that he exists.
Or if he did exist at one point, but you know, it was an ancient tradition. And that he uncovers
good.
That.
Yeah.
And he's the one who's been drinking the maybe that guy in the Last Crusade is Santa Claus.
He finds him in some kind of cave, you know?
What's that guy's name?
You chose wisely.
Yeah,
you chose poorly.
Sir
Joseph of Arimathea.
Sir,
wait a minute. Saint Joseph of Arimathea.
Saint Joseph of Arimathea.
I'm sorry, man. You said last thoughts.
Well, I said let's talk
about Elf
briefly about young Indiana Jones because
we
talked about this before we went on mic that there's an episode of Indiana Jones
of young
set
Indiana
in the 50s
Jones.
With Harrison Ford
as Indiana Jones
on break from the fugitive and he's bearded and it's an episode with Jeffrey Wright where he plays saxophone. I actually remember really liking it. But there's young Indiana Jones, two versions, the kid and the
Jeffrey
teen.
Wright's in it too?
Just that episode.
Oh, cool.
And then they cut this out after the TV run on, was it ABC? And it moved to like the Family Channel. And then when it went to streaming, but there used to be bookends to the young Indiana Jones Chronicles where Indy was in his 90s and he had a eye patch and he would start and end the episodes. And they eventually cut that stuff out.
The beginning and end of every episode or just
that's interesting.
And whoa. So
is he gonna lose his eye and Dial of Destiny? Well,
or does Harrison Ford shoot new wraparounds now?
That'd be awesome.
One of the one of the scripts that leaked that was from a fan, everybody thought was real because Indy loses an eye in it. And they all thought like they were doing continuity with that. But
it was somebody who really cared.
Someone who just knows the mythology.
Yeah.
Appreciates it.
So I bet on YouTube you could watch these wraparounds.
Probably.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That'd be cool to watch. People I've never dug into the Chronicles, but they're
me
on.
Me either. But now that I know that this episode exists, I'm going to watch it on.
I remember really liking it. It's they like skew towards the education, all these things. They're not action packed.
Well, what's not to like about being educated while you're entertained?
This is an episode about jazz.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. The I never had the. Even if young Indiana Jones Chronicles had been action packed, I just could never lock into action adventure TV series.
Yeah, because
I always knew it wasn't as.
Imagine being a character.
Wasn't Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, and they were written by Darabont writ some. Terry Jones from Monty Python directed some. I think this is where David Koepp got his start. I think there's some other people in there too. I forget.
But like to be such a character, a beloved character by Harrison Ford, that he's willing to play him on television.
I know.
In like a half-hour kid thing.
And it's in the snow too. Yeah. So it's interesting. And there's like a chase and then they just end up in a cabin.
Right.
Recalling this story. It's worth cool. Watching.
So he's like mid-adventure. It's not.
Yeah. I haven't seen it since it literally aired on TV.
I didn't know it existed until today. So.
Fun. And then are there some novels, any tie-in novels or anything like that?
Yeah, I think so.
He meets the boxcar children and stuff.
The little rascals.
Bunicula.
Indiana Jones and the R-Gang mysteries.
I mean, I guess he would have been, but he would have been an adult by the, you know, when Spanky was around.
That's true, because we were asking, does this fit Crystal Skull? Is after the
Young Indiana Jones episode.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. So that's 1950, yes. Supposedly.
50 is somewhere in
there. So after that, he shaved his beard.
1957 is Crystal Skull.
Yeah.
And this one is 69, this movie?
Yes. So he's 70 in this.
Right. Because he's.
He goes to Woodstock.
I believe it.
And then he goes and sees a re-release of Honor Majesty's Secret Service.
That's awesome. That's awesome. If that was the movie, like if Harrison Ford showed up to the theater to watch Honor Majesty's Secret Service and Phoebe Waller-Bridge was there and they just look up at the screen and then we all watch Honor Majesty's Secret Service.
Didn't this come out a year ago? Shut up. Let's just watch it. It's good.
Yeah, that it will be the first Indiana Jones movie that exists in a James Bond era. In the real world. So I wonder if Indiana Jones goes to a James Bond movie.
I bet he does.
He's hey, this kind of stuff I do.
Yeah. Waller Bridge suddenly has a Cockney accent and she goes, well, you James Bond.
I wouldn't be surprised if she references that at some point.
That'd
in
be
this
cool.
Movie.
So as long as they don't do a thing where Indy walks by a shop and somebody's on the piano going like, you know, bam, 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 bam,
oh God,
like
no, it's Hendrix. Hendrix comes up with it.
Oh my God, he's doing Star Spangled Banner into the Indiana Jones.
Or you know how in Crystal Skull when they walk through the, they're in the warehouse and the Ark crate is busted open and it just gives you a little of that music. He's going to be in a bar and there'll be a bottle of Crystal Skull vodka that camera pans to. And then they'll give you the theme from this movie, which I couldn't even tell you what it is. We haven't even talked about it. This is the weakest John Williams score of probably any movie. And I love this man. Don't get me wrong, but I couldn't tell you any theme from this movie. It's just very unmemorable.
Yeah, he did better scores for... Bridge of Spies in The Color Purple.
Yeah.
But he didn't even do those.
We know Hound Dog. That's the thing that sticks out.
I think it'll be better. I think everybody's more into this new one than Skull, I think. I think they're phoning in a lot on this movie. It feels phoned in.
The feeling of like, oh, they didn't want to leave the country and go outside the studios there. And the the wooden thing with it, like, I wish he wasn't as growly. If he just had a little lightness, because what it ends up sounding is like your dad's impression of John Wayne.
I know.
Because it'll be like, okay, then we're going to have to go to that temple after all.
Yeah. Oh, well, then if Eastwood was in it, it'd be really grunty. They'd be like grunting back and forth.
I know, grunt off.
I'm Ravenwood, you piece of shit.
Well, listeners,
this is the last line of the Dial of Destiny.
I'm
Ravenwood, you piece of shit.
And that's the opening line too. That's the whole movie.
Oh, it's the wall.
No, it's just that quick.
No, you know, the wall ends with.
Oh yeah,
it ends where the beginning goes. Yeah.
Well, last time we recorded, right after we bought tickets.
Yeah,
I want to say I have three tickets to three
different
screenings of this movie already.
That's awesome.
God, dude. I hope I like this.
How many days in a row? Are you doing 3 days in a row?
Well, you and I, us three, we're going on the 30th.
Yeah.
But that wasn't, I wanted to see it as soon as I could. So I'm going on the 29th.
So we'll get to read your face on the 30th when we're sitting down for the movie. You'll be like, what are Gorley's eyes?
I'm
going to
come
us?
In like rigidly, like,
are you excited about watching this again? That's what we'll say to him.
And then a friend I know is renting out the El Capitan to watch it at 9 o'clock in the morning on like July 6th or something.
Right
like
that. On. That yeah. sounds fun.
Yeah.
That's Why cool. Not?
Yeah.
Is that a typical thing that people can rent out the El Capitan?
I've never heard of it before.
Sometimes I see like posters at like the, you know, but at the mall
yeah,
or something
right.
about like renting out a theater.
Yeah.
It seems so costly. And, well, but then when I see advertisements for it, I'm like, well, I guess.
This person is in no need of money.
Is it Harrison Ford, Daddy Warbucks?
It's Elon Musk.
It's Elon Musk. Your friend Elon.
It's Harrison Ford.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where David Letterman bought his first car.
Harrison Ford.
That's what he always would say. That's what he would say. You know, I bought my first car, Harrison Ford.
Okay, so predictions.
Of Dial of Destiny?
Whether you'll like it, whether you won't, whether what we will or won't see.
Man.
For instance, does he ride off in the sunset? Does he die?
I think I'll like it. And I'm hoping I like it more than Crystal Skull. But we'll see.
I bet he dies.
I don't think he's going to die.
To say I think I'll like it, meaning I don't think I'll hate it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't hate Crystal
I wonder
Skull.
How much of the Logan bag of tricks Mangold will be using on this.
I think the franchise hero dying with Logan and Bond is done for now. And Tony Stark.
Spoilers, everybody.
And Han Solo.
Spoilers again.
Yeah,
spoilers.
Even just because of Han Solo, they probably won't do it, right?
Yeah.
Like, we did that. With the other Lucasfilms thing, so
yeah.
Unless do you they think do there'll be thing where like you cut to like Daisy Ridley and she imagines both Han Solo and Indiana Jones,
or Indiana Jones?
Like, are you a Force Echo? Force-based? No, I'm in your mind.
Do you think there'll be any handoff to Phoebe Waller-Bridge's character?
No, but Mutt, yes. Mutt's finally gonna be able to put that hat on.
He'll do like a Pound Puppies kind of
hat.
Thing.
I hope that there's a post-credit sequence where the hat finally blows to Mutt's feet and Shia LaBeouf fixes it.
Shia LaBeouf on Venice Beach. Being like, what?
just wasted that way. You can't tell if someone's dirty or tan.
Yeah,
he's just, oh my God, sitting there with like two women in bikinis smoking a spliff in 1969. Oh wait, I gotta hear more of this. This is, or he's like, they're camping in Malibu.
Yeah,
in a trailer.
Mutt showed up just like as almost like Batman 66 kind of thing, where like. Indiana Jones runs by like a trailer and the door opens and sticks his head. I was like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
Closes it.
You're a teacher?
Part-time.
That's so weird.
Do you know there's also two versions of that? Because the trailer had
the trailer's
a different
better.
Reading. Yeah.
It goes part-time.
Yeah. Part-time. Oh, man.
Should we give this some sort of rating on a scale of 000 to 00007?
Of course. I'm trying to remember. I know Raiders was 7 and Crusade for me was 6 and Temple of Doom was probably a 6 for me, I would think.
Yeah. This is a 3 for me. Easy 3 because 3.5 would be
average.
Dead middle. Mm. And this is a little below dead middle.
Mm, mm-hmm. Where's that fall in sort of James Bond territory for you?
It falls into like a
what's your corresponding 3.5 or 3? Tomorrow Never Dies.
For Your Eyes Only?
Yeah.
Tomorrow Never Dies, you blasphemous motherfucker. 10 out of 10, even though we only go to 7.
I'm giving it a 4 because it's still an indie movie.
Sure. Okay. I appreciate that.
I still watch it.
Yeah, I was 4.5.
Whoa!
Now I feel bad.
The three waterfalls really got them.
I'll see your 4.5. I'm giving it a 4.5 too.
Whoa!
Yeah, I can't.
I called it lousy. That's too strong of a word. It's just not as good as the other ones.
It's flawed. But, it's not finished. It's underbaked.
Yeah,
and a little overbaked.
We should rebake it.
You know what? It's true. So the hardest thing is just it's not as good as the other ones. But that's just because the other ones are so darn good.
Yeah.
Part time.
Well, we'll be back not long from now with our final episode of Indiana Jones.
Which I imagine we'll all rate 7, not a 7.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, because we have plans to record the episode the day after we see it.
Yes, which so it'll be as we have known from recording things like Spectre and No Time to Die immediately after seeing it, this will in no way skew our love of the movie. We're not going to come out raving.
I'm going to. And I don't care if I'm wrong. I just don't care. We can revisit later. So we're seeing it on a Friday. So Saturday, what is the date?
We're recording on Saturday, the 1st of July.
It'll come out that day, this episode. Yeah.
So, you know, it'll give you kids a chance to see it on your Fridays and then
your Thursday, Friday, or Saturday.
Listen to us on Saturday.
That's fun.
Indiana Jonesing. Theoretically, we'll return once we all watch that young Indiana Jones episode and then ride the ride at Disneyland.
I have been having quite a bit of anticipation leading up to this in a way that I haven't for a franchise movie from my childhood in a long time, where I feel like all year I've been thinking about this movie. It feels really sentimental
to me.
Do
you think The Force Awakens, you weren't feeling that because you had been wronged by three previous movies?
No, I had it a bit for Force Awakens, but... And I liked that movie.
I saw Force Awakens at a screening that Conan was at.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Seemed to enjoy it about as much as I did.
Once I saw Last Jedi, which didn't really land for me, I think that kind of all that stuff went away for a while. Yeah. But now it's back. And I was this way with No Time to Die, too, where I just knew going in, I don't even care if this is bad. These movies exist out of time and criticism for me. I'm just happy to have them. Happy to have him.
If the next one has a wit and genuine, like,
yeah,
because you know most of the time when we were talking about
Joyce
Raiders, Temple of Doom,
it does
Raiders, Temple of Doom, and Last Crusade. Most of the time we'd be talking about how funny they were.
Yeah,
remember, guys?
Right.
How much
I know
we
Last Crusade.
How funny they are.
Yeah. Screwball
so
comedy.
Feeling Dial of Destiny.
Is that why you came in hard on the three waterfall joke? You're trying
it's
to bring
literally the rule of three. Go on, guys. Do what it's doing.
And then, like, Karen Allen's comatose holding onto the steering wheel.
The way you're sinking your teeth into those wubble woos. Indiana Jones and the wubble woos.
Call it a rope.
Bye, everybody.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.